Minting a dollar. I get how this works. You know, you go to a mint, you print out big sheets of dollars, you cut them up, you get a dollar. I have one right here. Cardiff, I actually borrowed this from you.
Yes, I know.
But here it is. In all of its glory, a dollar. Right? It's clear. I can see it. I can touch it. You can hear it. But
you can give it back.
Patience, Cardiff. We're in the middle of a story here. Things get a little foggier, though, when we're talking about cryptocurrency. Take mining a Bitcoin, for example. I asked Michelle Raux about this. He does research on cryptocurrency for Cambridge University.
They essentially have to solve a complex cryptographic puzzle, which is essentially really just a complicated way of saying that they are guessing a random number. So whoever comes up with the solution first gets newly minted Bitcoin as a reward. So why is it called mining? Because it is a bit similar to essentially gold mining, that you have to provide some work to actually earn Bitcoin as rewards.
So basically, it's like dueling computers, it sounds like?
Kind of, yeah.
And not like dueling Chromebooks or MacBook Airs or tiny little laptops or anything.
No, nothing this understandable, ever.
These are like racks and racks and racks of computers, like hundreds of machines stacked to the ceiling, just grinding away and whirring. And Michelle says if you are in the Bitcoin mining business, the more computers you have, the better.
So you can compare it to a sort of lottery. So the more lottery tickets you have, the more likely you are to win the lottery, right? And so in this regard, it's pretty similar. It's just the more machines that you have, the more likely you are to actually solve the puzzle first and thus get rewarded with newly minted coins. And this is why the Bitcoin network consumes quite a lot of electricity, because all these machines are competing against each other.
This has actually been one of the big critiques of Bitcoin, that it uses a ton of energy. So that's not great for the environment, obviously.
But Michelle says all of that electricity use also represents one of Bitcoin's biggest strengths. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Cardiff Garcia. Today on the show, the cost of crypto money. How much electricity does it cost to make Bitcoin? And where is that electricity coming from? And I gotta say, the answers are wacky.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Ridge Wallet, the wallet with an innovative design using premium materials like titanium and carbon fiber. It comes with a lifetime warranty and free returns. More at ridge.com/NPR and get 10% off with code NPR. Support also comes from the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases. Now when you go out, you cash in. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms apply.
Today's indicator is 64.63 terawatt hours. That is how much electricity computers burn up mining Bitcoin every year. And that is according to the Cambridge Bitcoin Electricity Consumption Index.
Woo!
The CBECI, as we're going to not call it. It's an online tool that Michelle Raux and his colleagues put together.
And what does that mean?
Well, that's a very good question, because most people have actually no idea what terawatt hours actually means. So we added a comparisons page on our website to help people put that number into perspective. You can also compare it to countries. So right now, Bitcoin would be in between Austria and Colombia in terms of total electricity consumption per year.
So, but Bitcoin uses per year more electricity than the country of Austria?
Yes.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot, and it actually is a lot.
I don't know. It's not that big a country.
But it gets cold there. They have to use a lot of electricity. Anyway, but this number is likely to get bigger, because as time goes on, the equations that Bitcoin computers are trying to solve get harder and harder. They take the computers more time. The system has actually been designed that way.
But changing the system to use less electricity could actually damage Bitcoin itself, Michelle says.
Bitcoin, by design, needs to be inefficient. So that sounds quite strange, but the reason is actually that the more inefficient it is, the more difficult it is for a single party or a group of actors to dominate the network and so take control over the network.
So the inefficiency is part of its security.
Exactly.
Now, if these problems were easier to solve, yes, they might take the computers less time and use less energy, but then the system would also be less secure, potentially.
Also, Bitcoins might be created at a faster pace, which could eventually flood the market with Bitcoins and drive down the price. Bitcoin miners do not want that to happen, obviously. Right now, one Bitcoin is worth more than $11,000.
And so it won't come as a huge surprise that there are now millions of computers all over the planet mining Bitcoin, just sucking up all the electricity they can and racking up huge electricity bills.
And there's this equation that Bitcoin miners have to do. How much does the electricity cost to run all of those computers versus how much a Bitcoin is worth?
Or expected to be worth.
Yes.
See, in South Korea, it costs more than $26,000 to mine one Bitcoin. So you'd be losing money right now if your computers were in South Korea. In the U.S., it's only around $4,000. So you can make money if you mine Bitcoin in the U.S., again, right now.
Michelle says miners are scouring the globe for places where electricity is cheapest, places where they can plug in their machines and pay the least in electricity for their Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, for example, in Venezuela, a couple of years ago, the economy was in full-on collapse. But the government, the Venezuelan government, was heavily subsidizing electricity. So people all over the world started setting up machines in Venezuela to mine Bitcoin. It costs an estimated $500 to mine a Bitcoin there. So way cheaper than in the U.S. and way, way cheaper than in South Korea.
Yeah, $500 worth of electricity to make one $11,000 Bitcoin.
Recently in Iran, authorities, they had to seize thousands of machines that were operated out of mosques because mosques actually enjoy free electricity because of subsidies.
Computers mining Bitcoins in mosques, taking advantage of special subsidies Iran gives to mosques.
That's astounding.
Amazing. And in fact, all of these globe-trotting server farms have led to a larger worry. Regulators and policymakers are concerned that if Bitcoin gets really popular and keeps increasing in value, mining for Bitcoin might start gobbling up a big chunk of global energy, taking advantage of government subsidies that are intended to help nonprofit institutions or low-income residents, and possibly even eventually displacing electricity use for companies and even households.
But Michelle says it's not necessarily a zero-sum game, because sources of electricity are not all created equal. He says that recently, a lot of Bitcoin mining has moved to really remote regions. For example, China's Sichuan province, and also parts of Canada, and parts of New York and Washington State. Michelle says that cold places are best, because then you don't have to spend as much extra money to cool the computers, which get really hot while doing all their calculating.
Michelle says in a lot of these remote places, there will be a source of renewable energy, often hydropower, which isn't being fully used and couldn't actually be used for anything else.
Electricity cannot be transported over long distances, so it's because they're in very remote regions. And also, there is really nobody there to actually use that energy, so it can't be stored over long times because the batteries aren't there. And so because mining is a very portable industry, so essentially you just take your machines, load them onto a truck, and then you could just carry them essentially directly to the power stations, very remote areas.
So they just take, like, the machines, they, like, cart them out to the frozen tundras of Canada and plug them in?
Exactly. And then they use the excess heat produced by these machines to essentially warm greenhouses.
Oh, greenhouses that grow like tomatoes?
Yeah, exactly, for example.
Really? That's kind of cool. So we might be eating Bitcoin food?
Indirectly, you could say so, I guess. Yeah.
Wow. It's an amazing world we live in, really.
I love that reaction of yours
Bitcoin
to what Michelle just
salad,
said,
Cardi.
By the way.
Bitcoin salad.
I know. It's just this weird thing where, like, the social value of Bitcoin is still very much an open question.
Yeah.
Right? It's somewhat in doubt, I would say. And the silver lining here is that there are places where you can have a Bitcoin salad.
Michelle also says, though, that it is important to keep things in perspective. For instance, the amount of electricity used by idle home devices in the U.S. every year, so that's like a TV that's plugged in but isn't on, uses up more than three times the amount of energy Bitcoin does every year.
Okay, so our idle electronics are three Austrias.
Yes, our idle electronics are three Austrias.
But that's still, like, I'm getting a lot out of that idle electronics usage. You know what I mean? I'm still not sure what we're all going
to
get from
Bitcoin.
Because
you don't have to, like, walk over and plug your TV in when you want to turn it on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Is that worth three Austrias of electricity?
To me, it is. Yeah. The electricity measure.
I condemn you to spending the rest of your life eating Bitcoin salad. If you want to check out Michelle's work and see all of the comparisons, we have a link to the Cambridge Bitcoin Electricity Consumption Index on our website. That's npr.org/money.
This podcast was produced by Darius Rafieyan, edited by Patty Hirsch, and fact-checked by Emily Lang. The Indicator is a production of NPR.